Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
For me, as I get older, success is no longer kind of these, like, you know, very tangible financial goals or very tangible stepping up goals like that. It's really more about quality of life and making sure that I'm growing as an artist. I do have specific goals as an artist in terms of wanting to maybe win particular prizes or get particular recognition, but especially with the time constraints that we have as mother artists, I feel like success for me is even just getting the work done.
Friends, I am so excited to welcome Kiana Mestrich to the Artist Mother Podcast today. Kiana is a photography-focused, interdisciplinary artist whose work sheds light on personal histories of class, race, social inequality, post-colonialism, and international migration. Born to parents from Panama and Croatia, Kiana's work often references Black, mixed-race experiences from her perspective as a first-generation American. She has been exhibited worldwide, including the London Art Fair Photo 50 and the Brick Biennial Volume 3. In 2007, Kiana founded Dodge and Burn, a decolonizing photography history, which is an arts initiative that aims to diversify the medium's history by advocating for photographers of color. She's also co-editor of the book How We Do Both, Art and Motherhood, a diverse collection of honest responses from contemporary artists who dare to engage in the creative endeavors of motherhood and making art. I love that. Dare to engage. So good. Kiana is currently serving the artist mother community as the juror for our open call, You Are Not Wonderful Just Because You Are a Mother, which we will talk more about in this episode. And Kiana currently lives in upstate New York with her partner and her two children. It's such an honor for me to have you here and get to talk to you, Kiana. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. Super excited for this talk.
Of course. Okay, so start by taking us back, thinking about something in your childhood or early on in your life that sort of got you inspired in on this path to pursuing a career as an artist. Like, what was it early on that got you interested?
I can't say that there was a ton of art in my immediate environment. You know, I can say that music was a huge part of my household and my mom's background. My grandfather was a musician. So my mom had a great collection of records, and really the record covers were, I believe, sort of my first introduction to sort of visual culture in that sense, because, you know, there was always such great graphic design and photography on some of these record covers, specifically the ones that were part of the Salsa record collection. My mom's from Panama. I really feel like it wasn't until high school that I was really kind of thrown into art history within the academic setting, and then really exposed to formally into art in that sense.
That's interesting. I don't know. Like, I've heard people say that it was music, but I love this idea of it being the visuals of the record covers and, you know, just the whole experience, I guess, of hearing it and seeing it and engaging with records and albums and music. That's a cool thing to think about. Okay, Kiana, tell me a little bit about what your work looks like. You know, if maybe for somebody who hasn't yet had the pleasure of viewing it, like, what is your subject matter usually? Maybe talk a little about a bit about your process and medium.
Before I went to graduate school, I went to graduate school from 2011 to 2013. I was really kind of shooting straight, sort of documentary photography. Not a lot of, you know, processing or post-production or anything. Really shooting a lot of my immediate environment, my family, And, I had an early education in photography as well. In high school, I started as a sophomore taking black and white darkroom, wet darkroom courses, and then went on in college to study color photography. So, yeah, for me, photography was just a way to kind of express myself, but to kind of also get lost within myself and really explore the world from my perspective. And it was a solitary, I grew up as an only child, and it was a solitary sort of experience that I enjoyed. I was never good at sports or any sort of like team activity in that sense. So I really kind of gravitated to photography for that solitary experience, and also for the darkroom, for that like womb-like experience that I loved. So my photography initially was really kind of, again, just straight shooting, straight imagery. And then in graduate school, I kind of learned a lot about sort of image making and, non-lens based image making, and really gravitated towards collage. So my work sort of now kind of goes back and forth between this sort of straight documentary family work to this really kind of conceptual collage work. Where I'm just kind of layering a lot of imagery as well, and trying to tell stories that way.
So have you taken coursework in, like other studio art classes, or has it pretty much, your focus has pretty much always been on photography?
Yeah, I took in high school, I did take painting and did some watercolor, and in college, I did printmaking for the first year because we weren't allowed to. Photography was such a popular art course that we weren't allowed as freshmen to take the photo classes. But so I did a whole year of printmaking, which was fantastic. Did woodcuts and all kinds of, sort of printmaking forms that really kind of opened up my world as well. And I really love just working with my hands. And kind of trying to go back to that now in this time of sort of COVID art making.
Yes. Yeah. And where did you go to grad school?
I went to the ICP Bard College MFA program. So ICP, International Center for Photography, here in New York, had a program, unfortunately no longer exists, had a program with Bard College, which is based here upstate New York as well.
Okay. Cool. Kiana, you are also a college professor, is that right?
I do. I teach at FIT, which is a state school in New York City, Fashion Institute of Technology.
Okay. So have you kind of always, sidled pursuing an art career with teaching or another full-time job?
No. So teaching came out of really this experience of having children.
Okay.
And,
interesting.
Aside from being an artist, I have a separate kind of 20 plus year work history in corporate America, specifically in digital marketing. And teaching happened after my second child, and I kind of just, I wanted to work, but I didn't have a lot of time to work. And I thought, let's go for teaching. I saw a posting for at FIT for the photography department. I applied, and they ended up forwarding my resume to the computer graphics department. And it was there then that I started teaching a social media course to the photography undergrads. They hired me.
Interesting.
Yes. Yeah, so even though, I've taught in two departments now. Now I am actually teaching in the photo department. They hired me for a seminar course, but I've always sort of taught to photography undergrads only within FIT.
Okay. Did your work with Dodge and Byrne have anything to do with the social media hiring?
No, I think they specifically were looking at the fact that before my recent experience before I got that job was as the associate director of digital content and engagement at ICP.
Okay, I see.
I worked there for 2 years at ICP. And really led their social accounts, really kind of grew their Instagram, and then also worked a lot on their website and a lot of their web content and just sort of digital marketing communication. So they were, they thought this was a good fit in terms of for teaching the social media for photographers course.
Interesting. Okay, so I want to dive into a little bit more about your experience of motherhood and how that sort of influenced and infiltrated your art career. Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about your kids. Like, how old are they? And, you know, just some of that initial stuff about how they really, I mean, you already talked about changing your career path, but how they've influenced your art career.
Sure. I have two kids. My son is 10 and my daughter, my son Winston is 10 and my daughter Imogen is 4. Imogen was specifically named after Imogen Cunningham, one of my favorite photographers.
Beautiful name.
When I first started learning photography, this was like, I was 16 years old and I was like, I swear, I love this name. I've never heard it before. If I ever have a daughter, I'm going to name her Imogen.
That's beautiful.
So, and I still love the name to this day. So.
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah, they're really different, you know, aside from being almost 6 years apart. You know, Winston is extremely creative. I was just talking to him this morning about leaf rubbing that he did for class.
Oh, cool.
You know, that was just beautiful. And he was like, well, it's really the leaves. You know, they're the ones who did the work. But I was like, no, you added the colors, you added the composition, like really kind of getting into him with him. So we talk a lot about art and really he really gravitates. He's an amazing drawer, sketcher, and just does it on his own independently. He'll, you know, if he's bored, he'll just start drawing. Mm. It's really amazing to see.
Love that.
It's really nice to have that for him, that he has that, because he also is very much, of course, into screens and video games. But it's nice that he has kind of that balance with the art making.
Mm-hmm.
And then my daughter she's also creative, but in her own way, she's very expressive. She, you know, I think also being the smallest in the family, she's very, very loud and definitely wants to be heard.
And she's four. I have a four-year-old.
And she's four, exactly.
That's a complicated age.
She's like still in that weird toddler, not really, you know, kind of growing up kid stage. Very eloquent. Everyone's always talking. I have random strangers come up to me and say, she speaks so well. She's so articulate for a four-year-old. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So we'll see. You know, my husband wants her to be a lawyer. Maybe she'll use those skills. Those oratory skills for that.
Mm. Kiana, do you find any connections between like childbirth and your sort of birth of becoming a mother with, you know, the way your art has shifted since you became a mother?
Yeah, I mean, yes and no. I definitely want to say that when I had my son, I had my son and I went back to work when he was about 6 months and then I got laid off. So I had like two layoffs. I was laid off when I was pregnant with him and it was towards the end of the pregnancy. So I felt very fortunate to be laid off, honestly.
Yeah.
They were very generous with my maternity, you know, with, the layoff, employment insurance, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And so I felt fine with that first layoff. And then when I went back to work after he was 6 months, and then I got laid off again, I was like, oh, this is just really extremely emotionally and physically tiring, this whole experience. And that's when I applied to graduate school. I kind of just hit the applications as early as possible and was in graduate school by that fall of getting laid off from that second job. And I just felt like that something had to change, that I had to kind of pursue this creative side of me that I've been kind of suppressing for so long because I didn't have the time or the mental energy to focus on it. And Dungeon Burn sort of started in 2007 when I was working. And I would kind of start this blog and I would kind of blog during my lunchtime and during some downtime that I had at work. And then, of course, it just took up so much of my time that I was doing it a lot at night after work.
Hmm.
But yeah, I kind of had this reawakening after my son was born that, like, okay, it's now or never. If you don't go to graduate school, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, you now you have a kid. Like, it's just going to – your life's just going to get busier from here on out. And so, yeah, I really – it was difficult going to graduate school with a one-year-old, two-year-old, three, you know.
Yeah.
It was super difficult, and I wasn't able to participate in a lot of the activities because of it. But I really feel like becoming a mother kind of put me into this scenario. But, you know, it was in graduate school that I met Michi, my co-editor for the book, and that was, you know, the whole sort of place where the idea for the book was born, and out of that experience as mothers in school.
Mm. Yeah, that it's interesting to think about. I don't know, like for so many women, I think motherhood, you know, is this space where it just is so overwhelming and you can't imagine doing anything else, you know?
Yeah.
And then for so many women, it's kind of like, well, now I have some flexibility and freedom with my time and my space because I'm going to take care of my kid. And then it's kind of like, what else am I going to do? So it's just interesting how people kind of look at it and, you know, utilize the time. And neither way, obviously, is right or wrong. You know, there's no clear path, and you don't know how motherhood is going to affect you until you become a mother, you know?
That's the thing, and that's what I tell everybody. It's like there's so many depictions of motherhood in the media and, you know, in art history and in all of our kind of cultures, there's depictions of motherhood. But you don't really know what it's like until you're fully in it.
Yeah.
You have no clue. Not even when you're pregnant do you have a clue.
Yeah.
Like, it's until you're fully in it do you not know the kind of minutia of the workings of motherhood. And I also think it, you know, I grew up with a single mom as an only child. And it was hard for her. You
mm-hmm.
know, it was hard for her to work and take care of me at the same time. And I saw her struggle. And so I kind of had some semblance, some sense of an idea of what the struggle would be. I knew I would be a different situation because I was married and my partner was very supportive. And but
you also always had her example in your head of like,
yes,
you know, she did multiple things at once because she had to, like, she didn't have a partner to rely on, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. For me, motherhood was definitely a struggle, but it was clearly something that I didn't shy away from either.
Right. You know, that you were naturally going to integrate into, you know, your other passions and.
Yeah, I was somehow going to make it work. I mean, I didn't really start off until I met my husband. I didn't really think I was going to have children.
Yeah.
It wasn't something that was on my mind. It wasn't one of my life goals, but, once I realized that we were pregnant, then, you know, definitely, just was like, this is what's going to happen. It's just going to happen the way everything else happens. You know?
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more about your current work. This newer body of work you've been developing called Thrall.
Yeah.
I would love to hear you talk a little bit more about that. And I've looked at the work and I'm assuming that these are your kids participating in the making of the images. So I just wanted to hear a little bit about how that process is going too.
Yeah, so, you know, we recently moved to upstate New York from Brooklyn. Over the summer we moved, and the series did start back in Brooklyn. It started about 2017, so one of the early images in the series I took about 2017, and, you know, the work is really kind of, I think, my sort of internal processing of kind of the racial politics that has been kind of bubbling for the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all process things differently in our own way. But, you know, I really feel like our homes are often, you know, kind of these, I don't want to say battlegrounds, but kind of, you know, a lot of what happens in society at large clearly affects our home as well.
Right.
and
or what happens in our home affects our society.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And vice versa. Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, this work is kind of just, you know, a thinking about an exercising of a lot of my own internal thoughts and processes around this idea of white supremacy, as well as, you know, I feel like I've been getting a healthy dose of both, right? Healthy dose of like angry white people, but also like really amazing, creative, you know, kind of Black intellectual thought has come to the foreground as well.
Yes.
And it's just, you know, it's really specific to this country, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my family is sort of mixed in terms of our heritage. As you mentioned before, my mother's from Panama, my father's from Croatia. So I am the daughter of immigrants. Both of them were immigrants to this country. And I've had a very interesting experience kind of growing up in this country where there's clearly a color line,
mm-hmm.
And kind of figuring out where I fit within that color line. This is kind of something that's always on my mind. It's mm-hmm. always, it's something that society doesn't let me forget either. You mm-hmm. know, as a kind of quote unquote mixed race person living in this mixed race body that's constantly questioned in terms of, who am I? What are you? That is a question that I've heard a lot growing up. And then it's something that now I don't think my kids have specifically heard it, but they do hear it in other ways,
mm-hmm.
In terms of comments on their physical features or on their appearance or, and you know, my husband's side, he is, British born, of Irish and Nigerian, parents. So, you know, he also has similar experiences, and this work I feel like is another chapter in terms of the kind of continuing work around family that I do.
Mm-hmm.
I've found it important to document my family simply because our historical family album, or my own family album, I feel like hasn't been as intact as I would love it to be. I see, you know, throughout the history of photography that I've kind of gone down this path of studying photography and just even looking at vernacular photography and listening to people who study photographs, you know, there's always these interesting histories about family photo albums and how, you know, there's always usually one person who preserves them, or there's, you know, there was a tradition of, you know, maybe the father owning a camera and taking it upon himself to document the family. So, and there really wasn't anything like that within my family. And I definitely feel like migration has played a large role in this sort of lack of a photo history in my family.
Mm.
And we, you know, we do have photographs are just kind of, you know, random places. And so I think I'm constantly sort of trying to, my family work is constantly sort of trying to create this really concrete example of a photo album that I feel maybe other families have. And for me, it's kind of, it's sort of almost like a meaning of family.
Yeah.
And a very concrete representation of family.
Mm.
So yeah, you know, whether or not my children will go on to enjoy this work is to be seen, but at least those are sort of the reason for me for creating this sort of family work.
Yeah, I particularly love the image of, I'm assuming it's your daughter's hand sort of reaching through this.
Yeah.
Is it like charred or painted? I can't quite tell, which is probably the point, right?
Yeah,
this paper.
Exactly. There's always an element of kind of
mystery.
Yeah. And so I do play with that, you know, this, again, this idea of the mixed race body constantly being questioned. I play with that as well in my work, in terms of how it plays out visually, how that question plays out visually. But I have been making my own backdrops, for this particular series, working with very rudimentary materials, and it's the first time I'm kind of creating a studio setup, both indoors and outdoors, and working particularly with kind of very formal photography setup. But also having some fun because, as you can see, my kids are in it and they also have a role in it. And it's very collaborative with them.
I love that. I'm proud to share that this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast is sponsored by Faherty. Faherty is a family-run clothing brand fueled by purpose and optimism. They make high-quality, sustainably-minded, feel-good fragrance that you'll be proud to wear. This clothing that's made not just to last the season, but a lifetime of wear. For the past few years, I've recently tried to curb my clothes shopping habits and change what I wear to reflect my values. I've pared down my clothes to things I feel good in and feel good about, which means buying less fast fashion and making fewer purchases overall, but buying more high-quality pieces when I do buy my clothes. Faherty brand fits right into this model, and I'm kind of obsessed with their Arlie Day pants. They are super comfortable, but help me look slightly more put together than my usual yoga pants outfits. Anybody feel me? Faherty brand believes in social justice and has partnered with and supported some organizations you may recognize, like United Natives, Artists for Peace and Justice, the Trevor Project, and the Audre Lorde Project. They're also holding their company to a high standard with sustainability, designing clothes to last that are made with low impact on the environment. You can shop Faherty by heading to fahertybrand.com/artistmother. Use code ARTISTMOTHER, all lowercase, all together, for 25% off your purchase. It really means a lot when you support the brands that help support our podcast. Check out Faherty's website today and use code ARTISTMOTHER for a 25% off discount. That's pretty generous, guys. Thank you so much, Faherty, for supporting this podcast and our community. And now, back to our episode. Okay, Kiana, I kind of want to talk a little bit more, shifting gears, about some of the projects that you've taken on. I guess my first question for you is just kind of more of a selfish question, I guess, just because I obviously there's some similarities in our stories in that, like, we're artists and we're making our own work and we have these jobs that we're doing, but then it's like we're called to, I don't know, create this community around, like, explore the narratives of others, and bring people in.
Right.
So, like, there's this element of community, I feel like, that I've seen based on you starting Dodge and Burn and you producing the book How We Do Both. So I'm just interested to hear you talk a little bit about, like, just that compelling nature of just growing a community around this part of your identity, both as a Black photographer and then as an artist and mother, and using sort of project-based work to grow that.
Yeah, so with Dodge and Burn, it's funny. Like, I started that blog kind of for my own education. Mm-hmm. I was really reminded, when I started the blog, I was really reminded about, I was working this full-time job and, again, not feeling very creative, and feeling like I wanted to get back into photography, but didn't know how. And then I was kind of reminded of this experience I had in college, where I was having a one-on-one with my photography professor, and I asked him, you know, are we going to study the works of Black photographers? And he said, oh, yeah, you know, I think you should look up the work of Lorna Simpson and Carrie Mae Weems. And, you know, the library on campus should have some of their work. And I was like, okay. And, I was grateful for those references, as you are, you know, as sometimes as artists, we are grateful for, you know, another artist who may point out, you know, that, you know, maybe you should look at this artist's work.
And, right.
And so I just happily went along to the library, and luckily they did have books on both of those artists. But I was really disappointed in the fact that we never addressed any Black artists in class. And
So those weren't, and, they, he didn't actually talk about them in the curriculum.
No,
he was just like, oh,
no,
if you're interested, go. Oh my gosh.
Yes, not at all. And, you know, I went to liberal arts college, Sarah Lawrence, and their curriculum is that, you know, you have your core class, but then you also have a separate independent study that you take for each class, that you kind of do for each class as well. And oftentimes that independent study kind of finalizes in a, like a 20-page term paper or something. But maybe he thought that, you know, this was like an independent sort of idea that I could pursue on my own. But again, you know, it never came up. And so I just, from that experience, I realized how the canon of photography and the history of photography was just so narrow and so white, really, for lack of a better term, and predominantly white male focused. And so I, you know, it was, that was kind of the experience that I kind of rehashed in my mind. And I was like, you know what, I really just want to start this blog and blog about, you know, educate myself about who the photographers of color are in this, in the history of this medium. And from there, I kind of started just writing random posts about the photographers that I would discover. But then it became this thing where I started interviewing photographers as well, and interviewing contemporary photographers. And I would just reach out to them. And I didn't think that they would even come back and say, yes, I'll do an interview with you. But they did. And most of them did. And, you know, I really feel like it was both a thing where, you know, they were grateful that someone was actually, you know, paying attention to them, because they weren't getting a lot of attention in the normal photography press and photography outlets. But, you know, there was also a community that I was building, to your point, of, and it was, I was getting emails from people saying, thank you, you know, this is such a great resource. I was getting emails from teachers who were saying that they were incorporating it into their photography courses as kind of like, you know, a resource.
Yeah.
And it really became this thing, this community where other, you know, a lot of students of color could come and you know, kind of educate themselves and kind of fill in a gap in their own education. And now it's, you know, because I haven't had the time so much to blog, since about 2018, actually I started the group earlier, but now it's sort of formalized as a different community. And we, now it's a critique group, that I hosted both in person and now post COVID, we meet virtually every month.
That's great. I just always go back to this idea of a big project like that really needing to come out of an authentic need that you have yourself, you know?
Right.
Like, just as I've asked other people who, you know, or interviewed other people who, like you, kind of have these projects and ideas. And as people have asked me, like, well, why did you start Artist Mother? You know, it's because I wasn't seeing the visibility of,
exactly.
Like, I wanted to know more. I wanted to hear more stories and to know how people were making it work, because I it wasn't out there, you know?
Exactly.
So I just, I find that so interesting, and, you know, just encouragement for those of you listening, like, if you are not seeing what you need to see, make it happen, you know?
I mean, the stories that we do hear, you know, or that we do see, probably came from that very same need, but there's just so much more out there to explore, you know?
Yep.
And we live in a time, we're very fortunate to have a lot of these tools. You know, right now we're doing a podcast. Like, 10 years ago, I would have never imagined this. Like, you know, or growing up, you know, I loved Barbara Walters. I wanted to be a journalist for so long. But it really wasn't a reality for me in many ways, right? Like, I didn't even know how she became a journalist.
Right.
Like, but now, you know, I could really pursue that, right, if I wanted
to. Yeah, you could.
I could create my own
YouTube
show.
That.
Exactly. So, We live in such a time of these tools, and they're quite affordable. It's really just a matter of DIY, right?
Yeah. Free tools that the internet provides, right?
Yeah.
Go to your library if you don't have the internet.
That's right. Exactly.
Okay, Kiana, I want to hear a little bit more about how we do both. You know, this great book, and again, an amazing resource for people producing art who are also mothers. Obviously, you, like me, you were compelled to create something that talked about this this balance, this overlap, this identity that pushes up against each other as artist and mother. So talk to me about the production of that book and how that sort of came to be.
Yeah, so it started in graduate school. You know, I within my class, it was myself and Nona Faustine, who's an amazing photographer, many of you probably know. And then Mitra Dugarjian, who is my co-editor in the book. But it was the three of us, and there was a conference in Toronto that we applied. They had an open call. It was a conference organized around motherhood, and they had an open call for papers. And I approached, you know, the other two women in the course. We were the only mothers in the program at the time. And we would all, you know, already before this open call, we would just kind of congregate, the three of us, just be like, oh, you know, geez, there's so much that we feel like we're missing out in terms of, like, you know, after critique, the students would go out and have a drink and, you know, kind of talk about the program, talk about their work. And, you know, we had to go straight home to our kids, you know, or like, you know, we would have to bring our kids for open studio, and we'd have to, you know, it would be hard to concentrate on our own work because we'd have to be like watching our kids and making sure that they weren't like messing up someone else's studio. You know, like there were very specific experiences that we had in the program that we felt other people didn't have because they didn't have children. And so I found this open call, and then I approached them, Michi and Nona. I was like, we should do something for this. And so we created this book. We basically had this idea of getting the interviews together from, you know, pulling our own kind of community of artists that we knew, mother artists that we knew. And we handmade the book. We printed it in the school.
Oh, my gosh.
We handmade the book. So this was before the first edition of the book. And we created this sort of pamphlet-like version of the book that we gave out at the conference after our talk. And it was just, we had such a great response to it from the conference. It was a, you know, one-day conference. We went there, you know, Toronto is only a couple hours by flight from New York. And it was just such a resounding success for us that we thought, okay, well, we should probably continue with this. Like, we should make it bigger. We should do another book. And Michi was already starting Secretary Press, which is an imprint that she created, and that has other books published under it as well. And we just kind of went from there. And you know, it was really my intention to make sure that women of color, artists of color, were really represented in the book.
Yeah.
And that there was a diverse set of voices in the book.
And you pulled together essays. Like, so did you kind of send questions, or did you leave it very open-ended for people
we
to
sent
just...
questions. We sent three specific questions. You know, everyone kind of chose how they wanted to respond. And so some people responded directly to the questions, and some people wrote kind of free form responses to the question. For example, Justine Curlin wrote a really beautiful essay that I think resonates with a lot of people because it talks about her amazing experience. You know, kind of raising a young child on the road, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's shooting in this vast American landscape, it's just her and her, you know, her large format camera and her son and his toys in a van, you know, and it's really, and you see some of the pictures there too. And it's, you know, I've, over the years, I've had a lot of people, respond viscerally to that essay, both in anger of like, how dare she, you know, raise a child, put him in danger like this. To people just being like, wow, this is so inspiring and so amazing. So yeah, it was interesting how people kind of took their own form of responding. But the three questions were, one, how do you logistically balance art making and motherhood? Two, does your art making require a room of one's own, per the quote from Virginia Woolf's essay? And three, did having children enhance your creativity? So that was, those were sort of the three prompts that we gave artists to respond to.
And I have to ask, I have to put you on the spot because I know everybody listening is going to want a copy. Is it's not currently in print anymore, right?
No, yeah. Unfortunately, both editions are out of print. You know, Meech and I have talked several times about creating a third edition, and maybe at some point that, you know, one will come. But, you know, both our lives have kind of gone in very separate directions. Meech's super busy. She's board of the on the board of the Baxter Street Camera Club of New York, which is a wonderful gallery and arts organization. And as well as, you know, doing other things as an artist. So it's, you know, maybe eventually we'll come together and do another one. But right now, there's really no plans right now.
Well, if you guys need support getting pre-sales or anything, you let me know.
I think definitely our next step would be kind of, as we talked about, the next step kind of being just approaching a larger print house, right?
Yeah.
Instead of kind of going the small print run.
Yeah.
And then, of course, incorporating a lot more artists.
Okay, Kiana, let's talk a little bit about the open call. I was, you know, just so grateful that you entertained the idea of jurying for our community during a show. And you and I have gone back and forth over email, you know, kind of trying to decide what exactly the show should be. And, you know, but I know for you, you kind of right away had this idea for a theme, and I was wondering if you would talk a little bit about your inspiration and share a little bit more about how we developed the call for the show.
Yeah, you know, I've had a really interesting experience in general with motherhood. I can't say that I'm surrounded by a ton of other mothers, except for when I'm in kind of my children's school communities. A lot of my close personal friends are not mothers. And so I feel like I've heard many different opinions about motherhood, both positive and negative. And I really wanted to explore kind of some of those negative opinions. And know that there's a lot of pressure right now on mothers in this post-COVID time, you know, to be working and taking care of kids at the same time simultaneously.
And making sure they get their education.
Exactly. And also, right, making sure that homeschooling is happening. And it's really stressful. So it's not about, you know, okay, let's, you know, let's put more stress on mothers. No, but the open call is really, really, I feel, to kind of give other voices and visibility to some of these other notions of motherhood that we may not be so comfortable with. And I feel like we all have these experiences, right? As daughters, as children, you know, as children of mothers, but also as mothers ourselves, or potentially people who never intend to be a mother, which is, you know, completely valid experience. And should also be talked about within this discussion of motherhood, I think.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, just personally grateful for the, you know, the idea and the way you developed the call so thoughtfully, because even running, you know, the artist mother community, one of my fears from the beginning is that people would get this idea that we're trying to project like a singular experience of motherhood,
right,
or a singular conversation within the arts around motherhood, and that's not true, you know. Like, right. we're always looking for ways to sort of enrich the dialogue and show a variety of experiences, and that means from non-mothers, you know, we want those of you who are not mothers to submit to this call just to share your experience about motherhood or mothering or caretaking, or you know, because it's all relevant to this conversation.
Exactly. And, you know, the title really comes from this interview that I was watching with Japanese photographer Ishiuchi Miyako. And she, in the middle of the interview, when she's talking about this book that she's really known for, which is a book called Mothers, and it's photographs of objects that her mother left behind after she passed away. And they're very clinical photographs. They're very much just taken in this sort of very direct way that is not sentimental. You know, there is some sentiment as you look at them, but mm-hmm. I really feel like her approach was coming from a place of this sort of anguish and weird relationship that she had with her mother. And as an artist who specifically decided not to have children, you know, it was really interesting hearing her talk about this work. And then she just flat out says, "You are not wonderful just because you are a mother."
Right.
Which is kind of the way that you're, like, society sort of sets you up, right?
Yep.
It's like when you're expecting, it was like, "Oh, congratulations." Like,
yep.
Which is a weird position to be in, because you're probably feeling like shit. You know,
yep.
Like, you're, you know, yes, I know a lot of women have really healthy and wonderful experiences of pregnancy, but there's also some really weird things about pregnancies, right? There's painful things about pregnancies. And so, society kind of sets you up for this amazing, you're going to have this amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's all these visual cues and references of Madonna and Child, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, there's also this other side to it that I'm super interested in, and I think is ripe for exploring creatively.
Well, and I think too of, like, the many women who are not mothers, and just how, like, the burden of a society and a culture that constantly has this expectation that you will become a mother. Like, this is
right.
your role is
destiny.
To procreate. This is
yeah.
your destiny. And, you know, I think of my friends who don't have kids, and just how that is a burden that they carry, you know, and,
right.
and it's just so damn you patriarchy. Like, we got to blame it on someone. I think too, though, we have to take responsibility
Absolutely.
For ourselves, because
Absolutely.
As women, like, you know, we further these traps, you know,
right.
these enclosures that we put each other in. And having a show like this is a way
right.
that we're trying to break that down a little bit. So, yeah. So if you guys are interested in the exhibition, the deadline to submit is November 3rd. And you can find more at artistmotherpodcast.com, and just click the exhibition button. And it's right at the top under the big open call icon there. Kiana, just a couple more questions for you before we
sure.
wrap up. Okay.
Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit more about, you know, your art career. Like, have you ever had any moments of failure that you feel like would be worth sharing, just for people to, relate? Like, hearing you talk, hearing about your success is so wonderful, but I think people are always wondering about the other side of it. Like, where have you fallen short?
Oh, yeah. Several moments of failure. You know, I've had this book contract for the Dodge and Burn blog for about 5 years now. And, you know, I feel a little bit better about myself because I've spoke to a few people specifically within academia who's like, yeah, I've been writing a book for 10 years. It's, you know, it's
mm-hmm.
like, it takes a while. But I feel like that's a huge failure of myself in terms of, not getting that done sooner than later. I got the book contract when I was pregnant with my daughter, and just didn't realize how much having a second child was going to be like 500 times harder and not just twice as hard the way I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
So for me, that is I think about it all the time, and, you know, I speak to my editor like twice a year and constantly push the date back, and, you know, it's like, eventually we'll get done, but, I'm constantly living in a place of failure there. Another one that I'm always reliving is my thesis show for my graduate program. There was a lot of pressure to kind of really create this amazing body of work because that's what's going to catapult you into the art world. And, and I really didn't, you know, I created this body of work that I'm proud of, and I show on my website, but, the show itself, I felt, the way that I had put it together was not as complete. Again, at that time, I felt like I didn't have the luxury of time to really kind of think through and really get the help that I needed to actually put the exhibition together. I really felt rushed with it, and I constantly reimagine it in my head of how it could have been better. That's the thing with me and failure is that I'm constantly reimagining a different outcome, which I think is okay. I think, you know, it's part of that internal dialogue that we have with ourselves all the time.
Yeah, right? For sure.
Society doesn't talk about this idea of the internal dialogue much, but, it's similar to, you know, it's a coping mechanism that we have for ourselves, right? Of just like, telling ourselves it's okay, and you can relive it, even if it's just in your brain, in your thoughts, you can relive it and do it again successfully, and learn from it that way.
Okay. On the flip side, thank you for sharing those moments. On the flip side, what have been some of, you know, the moments where you've felt the most proud and the most sort of capable and accomplished?
As an artist, I try to have a really expansive practice. You know, research is a really big part of my practice, and with the blog as well. With the blog, what I really have loved is, you know, getting some of these emails from people that I've interviewed saying, hey, because of your interview, I was able to get this show, or, you know, this curator contacted me. So I really have loved the fact that the blog has given the platform to people who may have otherwise been invisible in this particular really kind of small microcosm that is the art photography world. And for me, a big moment was in 2015 where I spoke at the Women in Photography conference at the Tate Modern. It was like, whoa, I'm speaking at a huge international museum.
Amazing.
And I really took the opportunity not even to talk about my own work, but to talk about the work of a select group of Black women photographers. I felt like, and I literally opened my talk by saying, I'm not sure if and when these women would ever be in the halls of your museum on the walls. And so this is why I'm talking about them today. And, really kind of felt like that was an opportunity to get these women, give these women exposure internationally.
Thank you for sharing that. Okay, last question before we do our final five. Tell me what success means to you.
I used to definitely have a price tag on success. I used to say things like, oh, by 35, I want to be making $100,000 a year, you know. I used to have those kind of goals. But but now success is more driven around sort of my growth as a creative person. I feel successful when I'm healthy. I feel, especially now post COVID, you know, my mom, unfortunately had COVID in the spring. She's recovered really well, but like, I've always had issues with my health as a child, specifically around breathing. And so this COVID thing has really hit home personally. And so for me, being healthy is often success for me. And my children as well. My son has asthma. So now that he's growing out of it, I'm feeling really excited and successful as a mom. And so, yeah, it's no longer, for me, as I get older, success is no longer kind of these, like, you know, very tangible financial goals or very tangible kind of stepping up goals like that. They're really more about quality of life and making sure that I'm growing as an artist. I do have specific goals as an artist in terms of wanting to maybe win particular prizes or get particular recognition. But, you know, especially with the time constraints that we have as mother artists, I feel like success for me is even just getting the work done.
Yeah.
You know, just getting it created.
Yes. Good, honest reminder. That, yeah, just the fact that, you know, we can make work and balance everything enough to get a successful body of work made, I think is success in and of itself. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Okay, Kiana, final five questions, just for us to get to know you a little better. I'm interested to know, who is your biggest art crush?
Wow. I've got so many. It's funny. Going back to Lauren Simpson, she would be a huge art crush for me. You know, I loved how she's been able to kind of vacillate between photography and painting.
Mm-hmm.
She had a show last year in New York, and some of her paintings were just like, they looked like they were at least 18 feet tall. Like, they were just huge. I aspire to work on large scale like that. That's why she's one of my crushes.
Okay. What is your favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
Dream trip. I would love to go to Japan. Mm-hmm. I'd love to go to Japan. There's such a, you know, they're one of the world's oldest cultures, really.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just so much. I'd love to go to experience the kind of the city of Tokyo, but also just to kind of experience the interior countryside and kind of maybe visit some artists and artisans. Yeah.
Mm, I like that. Okay, what film or book has inspired you greatly?
Wow. I must say that it depends on kind of, I think it changes all the time. So it can't be one definitive thing, but I would say one book that inspired me recently is a book called Weeds, titled Weeds. And it particularly inspired me around the creation of this new body of work. It's the author is Nina Edwards. And it was published by Reaction Books, which is an imprint in the UK. But it's a really interesting book that talks about the idea of weeds and how a particular plant can be a weed or a flower, depending on the context.
Mm.
And it also kind of gets a little bit into kind of the colonial history of flowers and also kind of goes over the role of weeds throughout our history. So it's a small book, but it's a really interesting book.
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
Okay. What is your favorite meal?
Oh my goodness. I would love anything that's cooked by, any one of my family members in Panama. Panama has a really interesting, a unique cuisine that, is inspired by the Caribbean, even though it's a Central American country. Mm. But yeah. Delicious.
Yeah, sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Okay, and Kiana, I always like to close just with offering a space for you to give a shout out to someone who supports you in your work.
I want to shout out my husband. He's like, my husband Joseph has been by my side through from the beginning of going into the program, my graduate program, and he's always installing my exhibitions and, you know, he's someone that I look to for critical response as well to some works. I don't always take into account everything he says, but, you know, he's really behind the scenes, and I've also made work around him as well. And you know, I just feel really fortunate. I think it was Ruth Bader Ginsburg who said something about, like, make sure if you do marry someone who will support you in that sense of just like, and I really feel like fortunate to have found that in him.
Hmm. Okay. And where can people find more about you and about your work?
Yeah, you could definitely Google me if that's, you know, something that you're comfortable with. I have a really unique name, so there's a lot of information out there based on some of the work that I've done over the past. But KianaMestrich.com is otherwise my website, and DodgeBurnPhoto.com is the Dodge and Burn website, where you can learn a little bit more about the blog.
Are you on Instagram?
I am, but I'm not a prolific Instagrammer.
Okay.
You know, I teach social media a lot, and I actually teach a lot about the psychology of social media, behind social media use.
Yeah.
And so I really try to not get caught up in it.
just like all the leaders on The Social Dilemma. Have you seen that movie
yet?
Yes,
I haven't seen it yet. But,
the end of the film.
It.
Yeah, the end of the film, everybody who owns or has worked at Facebook, Google, Instagram, they're all like, yeah, we're not on social media. We don't let our kids on social media.
I know. Like, yeah, I wish I was better at it because I in terms of talking about failure, I definitely think that for some reason, like, it hasn't clicked with me like that, even though I teach it and I know kind of all of the strategy behind it. But it just hasn't, maybe it's just not my medium, you know?
Yeah.
but I am on Instagram at Kiana Mestrich as well.
Okay. All right, guys, apply to the open call and go look at Kiana's work. We have a blog post with more of her images and a little bit more about her and her work, and certainly links to where you can find her. Kiana, thank you so much for taking the time. So honored to have you during our show. And it was just such a pleasure to hear more about your work and all the great things you're doing for artists of color and, you know, especially to our community for artists who are also mothers. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm super excited for this open call. So I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you as well.
Yep.
Looking forward to everybody's entries.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.